Best of Times Radio Hour, live on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel, a show dedicated to seniors and boomers in Northwest Louisiana. Here's your host, Gary Kaligas.
Good morning, radio listeners. I'm Gary Kaligas, the publisher of The Best of Times, the only magazine and radio show for mature adults in Northwest Louisiana. I do thank you for listening to our show today, and also thanking those who might be listening via the internet at www.710keel.com. Also thanking those who might be listening via the Keel application on their Apple or Android devices. We also thank those who might be listening this show via podcast on previously broadcast radio shows from our website at thebestoftimesnews.com or from Apple Podcasts. We also want to thank AARP Louisiana and Hebert's Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer, for being the exclusive sponsors of this radio show to provide you with beneficial information each and every Saturday morning. In just a few minutes, we're going to learn how heat stresses affect our cognitive responses. So stay tuned to this radio show for some beneficial information for you and your loved ones. It's Saturday, March the 15th, and we are broadcasting our show from the studios of News Radio 710 Kiel, a Town Square media station here in wonderful Shreveport, Louisiana. However, today's show has been pre-recorded, so we will be unable to accept calling questions and comments from our loyal radio listeners. Be sure to pick up the March-April issue of The Best of Times at one of our 270 distribution locations. We thank you for the many compliments about a magazine. We do appreciate hearing from you. Again, this is a very popular issue. If you're unable to find a copy, a printed copy at one of our 270 distribution locations, you can always go to our website at thebestoftimesnews.com to view both current and past issues of our magazine. We actually have over 8 years of issues on our website, and people are reading those many years back. In addition, we have, of course, our 2025 Silver Pages Senior Resource Directory. And again, as I mentioned, you can listen to previously broadcast shows here on the Best of Times Radio Hour. As I mentioned, great news, our 24th edition of our most popular publication, Silver Pages Senior Resource Directory for Northwest Louisiana, has been released to the public, and it's available for pickup at most of our 270 distribution locations. Of course, it is always available from viewing from our website at thebestoftimesnews.com. We want to thank those loyal businesses who have supported the printing of the Silver Pages for the past 24 years. They understand that this resource directory is valuable and beneficial to our seniors, boomers, and their families in Northwest Louisiana. Be sure to pick up your free copy. As I mentioned, it is the only printed comprehensive senior resource directory in Northwest Louisiana. Again, there are a limited number of copies available. Hopefully, you will be able to pick one of those 25,000 copies that we have printed, or again, you can visit our website. Each and every month, the Best of Times sends out a TBT newsletter via e-blast to over 73,000 email addresses of seniors and boomers in our area. It provides them with a link to read our current issue as well as to read our current Silver Pages. In addition, there are more educational articles that are not found in our printed edition of The Best of Times magazine. It also includes discounts and coupons, a contest, and of course, news about upcoming events and activities that you can participate in. Join the many, many thousands who are receiving this free newsletter via email address. Just visit our website at thebestoftimesnews.com to subscribe free of charge, and you will start receiving this each and every month. Great news, our friends at Ernest Arlene's has brought back the Best of Times special dinner on every Thursday from 4:30 p.m. to closing, with fabulous meals at a highly discounted price. It is highly recommended due to the popularity of this Thursday night Best of Times special to make advance reservations by calling 318-226-1325. Again, 318-226-1325. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Kiel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and Hebert's Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM at 710 Kiel.
Welcome back to our show, The Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and Ebert's Town and Country F's Report, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kaligas, and thank you for taking time to listen to our show today. Joining me on my show as a special guest is Dr. Corey Cohorn, who is a PhD Program Director of Rehabilitation Science Program at Ochsner LSU Health here in Shreveport, and he's going to discuss an interesting topic of research regarding heat stresses affecting our cognitive responses. So thank you, Dr. Corey, for joining us today here.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about your background.
So I'm originally from Alberta, Canada.
You don't have a Canadian accent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't think you do.
I can play it up if you want me to.
Okay, thank you very much. Just got back from Quebec and Toronto and Montreal. Now, you can definitely tell the distinct accents there.
Yeah, I've spent some time over there. I lived in Quebec for a little bit, and then but most of my life I was in Alberta. Mm-hmm. I was born in Medicine Hat, Alberta. And then I moved to Calgary for a while.
Oh, been to Calgary, yes.
Yeah, I lived in Calgary for almost 10 years, and I spent a little bit of time in Quebec before coming to the U.S.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Glad to have you here in the Shreveport and Bossier area. So your early interest in science?
Yeah, so I grew up, you know, I'm a blue-collar individual. My family was all in the construction business. I did my bachelor's degree in kinesiology at the University of Calgary. Okay. Following that, I was working as a personal trainer, and I was perfectly content working as a personal trainer. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of good experiences with my clients. But I ended up making the Canadian weightlifting team.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I was on the national team for a while, and part of being on the national team was we did a training camp in Shreveport, Louisiana with Dr. Kyle Pierce.
Wow, what a small world.
At LSUS. So this was back in 2011. I came down for a training camp, and while I was here, Dr. Pierce said to me, he says, why don't you come down and do your master's degree with us? I decided to do a master's degree in kinesiology, moved down here for a couple of years. During that time, I met my wife, got married in 2013. We moved back to Canada. I ended up getting a job eventually at a local college in Canada teaching kinesiology-type classes. And because I fell in love with teaching and academia, I decided to do a PhD, and I did a PhD at the University of Victoria in British Columbia. Upon finishing my PhD, there was a job opportunity at LSUS where I did my master's degree, and it kind of came around full circle.
Oh, wow. Sometimes those particular paths open up, the right, the left, you never know.
Exactly.
But hey, your venture to come to Little Shreveport, Bossier City, Louisiana, probably a shock. You probably never knew about it before you got here.
Never. Right? I mean, I knew a lot about New Orleans. I'd watched LSU play, so I knew about Baton Rouge, but nothing about Shreveport.
No. Well, Shreveport's a good area. I've been born and raised here, but traveled the world, but I love to always come back to my native Shreveport and Bossier City. So you specialized, why did you specialize in firefighter and military research? That's an interesting technique.
Yeah, so during my PhD, the chair of my PhD committee, she did some work with firefighters, and in doing work with firefighters, she had a project. And so when she took me on as a PhD student, she said to me, you know, here are a few options of projects that you can do. And one of them had to do with firefighter heat stress, mm-hmm. and how does it impact, you know, cerebral oxygenation or the oxygenation of the brain, neural function, or basically how the neurons in the brain fire. And it intrigued me, but prior to that, I really hadn't done anything with heat stress and cognition. But following that, it's just kind of evolved. And following my PhD, I continued to do research in that area, and it's kind of led me down this path, and now I'm starting to work with the military as well.
Wow. We're going to talk about some of those. So what challenges in your research? Has there been challenges?
There's always challenges in research. I do a lot of human subjects research. So I work with humans. And because I work with humans, there are always factors like people showing up for their testing, people being engaged. Now, luckily, I've developed strong relationships with Shreveport Fire, Bossier Fire, Caddo Fire, Bossier Parish Fire, Houghton Fire, you name it, in this area. I've developed great relationships. And because of that, because of the developing of these relationships, it's made it easier to recruit subjects and to get them involved in my research.
So the subject is one-on-one. It's not hypothetical. It's actually
These are people. Yeah, these are people, yeah. So developing the relationship with these people. Yeah.
So do you have other staff people to help you, or you're just the one-man researcher?
Well, I have a lot of people that help me. And the people who help me are PhD students. So I'm the director of a PhD program at LSU Health in the School of Allied Health Professions. And a lot of those students help me with my research. But in addition to that, we also have medical students who help out as well. Medical students are always eager to be involved in research. And so they're also important members.
So how long has this been taking place? And you probably ended up getting some grant to do this, correct?
Yeah, there's been a few grants that we've gotten over the course of the years. But the research itself, it's been going on basically since my PhD. So I finished my PhD in 2018, and ever since that, it's just continued to evolve and grow, and we're looking into new things, trying to develop new areas, and it's just really been an exciting process.
So why was just firefighters and military involved in the research, just those two particular disciplines or professions?
Well, I started with firefighters because that was the first group that I worked on during my PhD, and I've always had a fascination with firefighting. As a kid, you know, I would watch fire trucks go by. I was excited about it. I mean, I always thought, hey, you know, maybe down the road I would become a firefighter. And I still think about maybe doing the volunteer side of things, but, you know, time is a factor.
That's true.
So I was always intrigued by them. I've always thought it was a really interesting occupation. And then as I've gotten into it more and I've learned more about it, I've found out that it is a really stressful occupation. And because it's a stressful occupation, there are high rates of cardiovascular disease and there's high rates of cancer among firefighters. And, you know, I want to solve these problems. I want to work on these problems so that we can, you know, make these individuals healthier.
And that's the particular goal for the research and determination. We can know what risk factors involve, et cetera, right?
Yeah. Ultimately, when you do research, and specifically in my area, the first thing that you do is you identify the problems. So I'm continuously doing projects to identify the problems, but ultimately there becomes a point where you need to start finding the solutions.
So there's other professions that deal with heat, of course. People that are involved in manufacturing, I'm sure that's a major issue, of especially iron workers and different like that doing welding. That can be strenuous, true, right?
Yeah, there is a lot of occupations, athletics, you name it, that deal with heat stress. We're looking at even potentially getting into, you know, looking at football players and seeing how the heat stress impacts them, because, you know, as we know down here in Louisiana,
yes,
the heat, especially during training camp and in some of the practices, you know, is quite excessive. So we want to figure out, you know, what are the consequences of that? Because there's been several situations over the course of history or in recent years where individuals have died, you know, on the field as a result of heat-related illness.
So are we also, the end result of your research is to educate the trainers, the people that the training programs, et cetera, these particular professions that can help reduce this incidence?
Yeah, one of the things is to train these individuals, the athletic trainers and doctors and things like that. But the problem with heat-related illness and heat-related stress is that the response to it is reactive. It's always been reactive, meaning you see someone on the field or you see someone in the occupational environment and they're keeled over. They might be, you know, throwing up. They might be in a position where, you know, something's going on. But because we rely on the reactive process, we delay the treatment. So we see these individuals in trouble. We try to figure out what's going on with them. Ultimately, we figure out that they've undergone excessive heat stress. And then the next process is to go, we need to treat. And the treatment involves putting them in ice baths or putting, you know, cool towels on them, try to get their core temperature down. So the whole point of my research and kind of where I'm going with my research is, instead of making it a reactive process, make it a proactive process.
Being,
we need to monitor these individuals and determine when they are
at
that excessive core temperature levels. Now, there are a few ways to monitor core temperature, and One of them is via rectal probes. Okay, that's not something we're going to use in the field, right?
No.
Another one is swallowing a core temperature capsule. Core temperature capsules are great, but if you drink water or you have food, it will mess with the core temperature capsule. Also, they're about $80 a piece. So you're not going to give each and every football player, each and every occupational person, whether firefighters or military or whatever they might be, we're not going to give them an $80 capsule.
So explain, the capsule transmits the temperature of the body?
Is that Think like that? A Bluetooth device.
Whoa.
That sends the temperature from the capsule or from the pill to a reader, and the reader tells how hot the individual is. So the direct measure of core temperature is complex, and it's either really expensive or it's really invasive. So the next logical solution is to create predictive mechanisms. Okay. So what we do is we take physiological variables, like heart rate, breathing rate, skin temperature, among many other things, and we use those variables, and using things like algorithm development, AI, machine learning, we develop these algorithms that can be, that are, these are these predictive algorithms that are used to actually accurately tell how hot these individuals are. So instead of having to swallow a capsule or, you know, the other invasive methods, they just wear a device that captures physiological data. And from that, we use formulas, algorithms to explain how hot they are.
So that's like almost wearing an Apple Watch or some kind of detectable item that tracks various things. Why couldn't you just take their temperature? The temperature is not a relative, right?
So when you say take their temperature, there are a few ways to do it. And I mentioned the most effective ways earlier. Right. There are other ways. For instance, you know, during COVID and things like that, they would look at our foreheads. But really, what they're measuring there is skin temperature, which has no indication of where you are from a core temperature standpoint. So measuring skin temperature or surface temperature doesn't really do a good job. You can also measure in the ear. Measure something called tympanic pressure temperature, or the inner ear temperature. Not very accurate as well. The issue with a lot of these methods is either they're incredibly inaccurate, they're invasive, or they're really costly. And so to use them in the field just doesn't really make sense. But these predictive algorithms, and I'm actually working on a few things, and we're getting really strong results. So the whole goal is to take these systems or these predictive systems and apply them in the occupational environment or apply them in the athletic environment and use it to prevent these individuals from getting too hot.
So, Dr. Corey, I can see that you're going to be asking the individual to swallow the pill, and then you'll know the temperature. Then you'll use something else to try to determine it the same value. Is that right?
Exactly. When you do experimental studies, that's exactly how you do it. But once you have those algorithms developed, and once you have them validated, and once you've ultimately you get to the point where obviously they don't swallow the capsule anymore, and you just use the algorithms that are embedded into the system, and they accurately predict.
So the capsules are used quite frequently in various professions throughout the world?
No, the capsules are almost only used in research purposes.
Oh.
That's the only scenario where it really makes sense.
Okay.
Just because
I've never heard of that.
Extremely costly. I use them daily in my research.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long do they last? And you have to...
The ones we use, they capture 2,000 data points, and they capture every 30 seconds.
Every 30 seconds. That is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, you know... I hate to say this. I can hear my listeners out there. Where can I get one of these to find out how my temperature is going up and down?
Well, tell them they can. If they're firefighters, they can enroll in some of my studies. And
okay, that's a good point. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information. But now, a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. And now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and Hebert's Towing Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kalikas, and I do thank you for taking time to listen to our show today. Joining me on my show as a special guest is Dr. Corey Cobhorn. Is that close?
That's better.
Yeah. PhD, Program Director of Rehabilitation Science Program at Ochsner LSU Health here in Shreveport. And he's discussing how heat stresses affect our cognitive responses. So we've known this, right? Have we known this scenario that heat affects us, or we have not?
Yeah, all you need to do is, if you're exercising outside or you're working outside and all of a sudden you feel like you can't think properly anymore, you've probably experienced some sort of cognitive decrease or decrement.
And what some people say, you know, you're working outside in the 101 degrees of our weather, wonderful weather here, okay, with very, you know, 100% humidity, not a cloud in the sky, you get a heat stroke, a heat daziness, right?
Yeah, and once you reach the levels of heat stroke or heat exhaustion, your core temperature is extremely elevated at those points, and associated with those types of conditions are confusion, delirium, you name it. Now, those are excessive values for heat stress. When we talk about heat stroke, I mean, that's obviously
way up high.
That's the peak. That's where you're, you know, you start to see all kinds of medical issues associated with that. But pre-heat stroke, you know, among occupations like firefighters and military, and like you said, when we're talking about 100 degrees and 100% humidity, a lot of people are going to be outside working and they're going to experience cognitive issues. Well, some of these cognitive issues are not really an issue if you're not in an environment where cognitive clarity is necessary. So when I talk about this type of situation, I talk about firefighters. Well, firefighters, when they arrive on a scene, a lot of their responses and a lot of things that they do are automatic. You know, they pull the hose, they do things that are just automatic responses. Now, the issue arises when all of a sudden they deal with a complex event. For instance, like a search and rescue event, where they need to figure out, they need to think clearly. Now, if these firefighters are already to the point where their core temperature is elevated to a point where they're starting to see cognitive issues, then all of a sudden, they put themselves and they put those in their care also in danger.
Yes, wow. And so that's the extreme heat, and it gradually increases, right? And are they cognizant enough to know when it's happening?
To a point, but again, among a lot of these occupational groups, especially when you're working to save people or you're trying to save structures, the automatic response is, I need to stay in, I need to keep going, I need to keep pushing. Well, the whole goal of my research is to go, okay, you've gotten to a point where cognition is starting to, you know, you can't think effectively anymore. We need to pull you out and we need to put someone in there. We need to replace you with someone who is thinking clearly again because of the importance of the life-saving event.
And also, you're going to be educating those people that are supervising those individual wonderful firemen, firewomen that are at the front line. In case they have those conditions, they can pull them out quickly, not delaying, right?
Yeah, so the whole point of it would be, you know, a fire commander or fire captain would have an iPad or similar in front of them, and it would be able to monitor each and every firefighter to say, this firefighter A is at this temperature, and go on, you know, throughout all the firefighters. And all of a sudden, firefighter C gets too hot, pull up firefighter C and, you know, make a replacement.
Wow. That could save lives, but also save the firefighter's life, but also, as you said, the other people that they're trying to rescue, and they're trying to put the fire out quickly enough to take care of the individuals that might be in the facility or in the home. That's really.
What?
So explain to us, I when I see them out there working, I'm just praying for them. They're carrying all this gear and headsets and heavy, probably heavy jackets and coats and fire protection. That's probably a stress on them as well, right?
Well, believe it or not, that is the primary stress.
That's the primary stress.
That's the primary stress. When we think of heat stress among firefighters, our main thought process goes towards what has to be the fact that they're inside of a hot building.
Mm-hmm.
And there's 400 degree temperatures or higher. Okay. In that environment. Now, that is one factor, But believe it or not, that is not as big of a factor as the fact that they're wearing their firefighter personal protective equipment, which is heavy and cumbersome, covers their entire body, and is absolutely non-permeable to the outside environment. So what happens to firefighters and bomb disposal and anyone who wears high-level personal protective equipment is that once they start heating up inside, it can't escape. Because we as human we as human beings, the way that we thermoregulate is we sweat, and that sweat evaporates into the environment, and that cools us down. Well, firefighters, they sweat and they sweat and they sweat. Well, guess what? No evaporation, being that they are trapped within that personal protective equipment.
Oh.
It can't escape, and we end up in a scenario where their core temperature just continues to elevate.
So, yes, if we could monitor that. Do they have any kind of gauge on their equipment? I've never noticed that. That tells them what the temperature is inside their suits?
Nothing like that exists right now. No, and that's kind of what we're working on putting together, is some sort of wearable that they could use to determine how hot they are. The main monitoring system they have right now is on their air tank, which says they're at low air. And once it's at low air, an alarm goes off so that they can get out of the environment. That's really the only monitoring system they have on right
now. Is the air. Okay, so some cooling strategies for firefighters?
Yeah, and so
and others?
Yeah, cooling strategies, they are effective in certain environments. So for instance, you know, people will wear ice vests. They're well water-perfused suits that are hooked up to a cooler, and it pumps cool water through the water-perfused suit and helps to keep their core temperatures low.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that works if you're in an occupation where you're relatively stable. So we see this being used, you know, like among surgeons and among medical personnel who are relatively stable. But a firefighter can't use that because they can't lug around a cooler with a pump in it. So cooling strategies for firefighters are mostly getting the gear off,
okay,
putting cold towels on, drinking ice slurries, things like that in order to cool themselves down.
As quickly as possible, huh?
Yeah, you can't really wear anything. One, it's going to add weight, and number two, it's just not effective.
So I take it that because of this heat, they get dehydrated, right?
Wow. Extremely. Yeah, and that's the thing is as you're losing water via sweating, you're becoming more and more dehydrated. And becoming more and more dehydrated, you decrease your blood volume. And you decrease your blood volume, your cardiovascular system goes through, you know, all of a sudden becomes stressed. And that's one of the factors that contributes to cardiovascular issues among these groups as well.
So I'm just trying to relate this back to individuals. So let's say they're working in the yard. They need to get a cooling strategy. If they're feeling a little bit of cognitive, they need to cool down.
Yeah, the main thing is if you're working outside, especially here in Louisiana in the summer, and you start to feel weird or you start to feel like your head is starting, you know, the best thing to do is one, go inside and cool down. The best is to go inside and cool down. Second thing, drink something cold, put a cold towel on your head. You need to keep your core temperature low, because the reality is once your core temperature elevates, it is very, very difficult for you to bring it back down without exiting the heat stress itself.
Wow. Okay, so how quickly do they get their fluids back when they go, let's say the firefighter is in a possibly dehydrated mode? Do they recover quickly based upon the activity of getting fluids to recover? Is it quick?
From a hydration standpoint, I mean, there's several factors that contribute to hydration, becoming hydrated again. I mean, it does take time. There's a lot of things, you know, you hear about gastric emptying or the emptying of the actual fluid from the stomach and getting. It doesn't happen immediately, though. It takes time.
I thought the other item that you mentioned in your list of notes here, I didn't think about this, was multiple calls from a fire station. If they had multiple calls, wow, that could probably increase.
Yeah, and some of my research has looked into that. You know, what is the impact of one call or one heat stress bout, and then how long do those effects last? Well, and it turns out that the stress response, specifically looking at cortisol, cortisol is actually impacted 24 hours later, and cortisol is a stress hormone. So if you have multiple calls, logically, you would see a compounded effect where you would see, you know, increased stress response from the first instance, and then you would see another spike again if they go out. And now, again, elevated stress on a regular basis leads to cardiovascular disease, which leads to cardiovascular events. And that's one of the reasons why we see firefighters in these groups having these, you know, major issues.
So I'm sure you make recommendations to, which I'm sure the firefighters know it in all these disciplines throughout the world, is they send multiple teams, that they're multiple, so they can send the freshest team first and then the others are still recuperating, right?
Well, that happens in larger
cities,
larger environments. You know, for instance, Shreveport and Bossier would have, you know, firefighters, were more firefighters that can respond. But the smaller places, you know, think of Houghton and think of some of these other areas, I mean, they're limited in how many people they have. So the ability just to send out the freshest people might not necessarily
be the situation.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm fascinated that this is happening and probably was never concerned about for many years. You think that?
Well, they've known about the cardiovascular issues for a while.
Okay.
And they've known that it's an issue. Pinpointing what causes it, that's another factor. It's several things, lack of sleep, the stress, you name it. Those are all factors that contribute to it. Recently, the cancer issue has become a major thing where they're starting to think more and more about that. So cancer is definitely a big focus now. But also gaining momentum now is the cognitive aspect and keeping these individuals.
So the cancer, are you researching it, whether it's smoke-related? Do you think it's that?
I don't specifically do that type of research related to cancer, but most research is pointing to the fact that it has to do with what's burning around them.
Oh, okay.
For instance, the chemicals in the air and what they're exposed to. And, you know, when they take their gear off, they're still exposed to those chemicals.
And it may be on their suit when they're taking it off.
On their suits, in the air, all around them. I mean, it's a stressful occupation.
And the other thing about night calls, you never know when they be called. And they're going to be losing sleep and their cognitive effort in there if they don't get enough sleep and et cetera.
Yeah.
It's pretty pretty effective.
Yeah.
Lack of effectiveness, right?
Well, you and I, you know, we go to sleep, and I mean, some nights we might not sleep the best, but most nights, you know, you put your head down and you sleep for 6 to 8 hours or whatever it might be, and then you wake up in the morning and you go. These guys go to sleep, and you're right, they could have these alarms that go off in the middle of the night, which spikes their heart rate, and they have to respond and get dressed and get out the door. That's stressful.
So are there any differences between the volunteer firefighters and the career firefighters?
I mean, there is in terms of, you know, responses or, like response to calls, right? You know, volunteer firefighters are not going to have as many calls as the career firefighters. So for instance, if you work for Shreveport or Bossier, I mean, you're going to get more calls than you would if you're a volunteer in Caddo or Bossier Parish. It's just, that's the reality of it.
And, you know, and they're going to have similar stressful scenarios of heat, possibly. Even yes. The volunteers could have that, right?
Yeah, they definitely can. They'll just happen less often. And what we find is that more and more and more of these stressful events lead to elevated issues.
So what is your end purpose of this research regarding firefighter-specific research? What's the end result?
The end goal is to create something to monitor these guys to decrease the amount of stress that they face. Because if we can, again, back to the physiological monitoring device that predicts core temperature, if we can put them on, we can stop them from reaching these really elevated core temperatures, and we can decrease the stress on an acute basis or on a single basis, right? So every time that they would go to a call, they're not going to reach these stressful levels that they would without being monitored. And if we can decrease the amount of stress that they face on their calls over the course of time, cumulatively, they will be exposed to less stress over time.
That is a great result. So again, this research, is anybody else doing this similar research in the world?
There are several individuals who are looking at firefighters and heat stress and military and heat stress.
Are y'all comparing notes?
We see each other at conferences. But when I say several, we're not talking thousands. We're talking, you know, tens. There's not very many people.
But I could see the impact of this helping people, not just our firefighters in the United States, but all across the world.
Of course.
And if you come up with the algorithm and you come up with the system to monitor that, it could save lives. It also protect them in helping do their job better without being as strenuous and as possible, right?
Yeah. Well, imagine an individual or someone in town who's doing some gardening and they're outside and they're wearing a wearable like a watch, and that watch sends off an alert saying you're getting too hot and you better go take a rest.
That's right. It could be another Apple application on your Apple Watch. You could be world famous developing that as well.
I don't know about that.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM at 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kaligas, and I do thank you for taking time to listen to our show today. Joining me on my radio show today is a special guest, is Dr. Corey Cohorn, who is a PhD Program Director of Rehabilitation Science at Ochsner LSU Health here in Shreveport. He's discussing his research involving how heat stresses affect cognitive responses in various professions. So we talked about the profession of firefighters and that specific research, which is fascinating. And I wish you well, and I hope that gets implemented soon to help our firefighters throughout the world. And you'll be coming out of Shreveport and Bossier City area and LSU Health, so you should be very proud of that.
Well, thank you.
So the next item of research, you went into air crew specific research. So tell us how that came about.
Yeah, this is a recent venture. So being our proximity to Barksdale Air Force Base, it's just logical that we work with them. And so about 3 years ago, I started down the process of developing a relationship with Air Force Global Strike Command. And in doing so, you know, there are several processes involved to getting research going with them. The first step is to introduce yourself. The second step is we establish something called a CRADA, which is a Cooperative Research and Development Agreement with Air Force Global Strike Command. And then we went through the IRB, or the Institutional Review Board process, to get the research approved. And just recently, in February, I think it was 5th and 6th, we finally started collecting data. And the whole goal of the project is to look at the physiological and cognitive consequences of the B-52 sorties, or the B-52 flights.
And the flights being long durational flights, right? How long are they generally? Is that top secret or what?
No. I mean, their training flights are, I think, roughly about 6 hours, what they on town. But the longest missions are upwards 30, 35 hours. And they're trying to make it where they can get up to 48 hours. Continuous.
48 hours continuous.
Continuous flight. Being refueled in the air and just continuing.
That's amazing. So your focus there is to look at the decision making, their alertness, and
we want
them all to go to sleep at the same time, right? Is that factor?
So monitoring fatigue is definitely one of the things. But just like I did with the firefighters, the initial goal is to figure out what actually are the stressors. What do they actually face when they're in this environment? One of the things we know is they do face heat stress. So on the B-52s, the environmental control is not necessarily perfect, being that the B-52s themselves were built in the late 50s and early 60s. the environmental control is really not that good. And so what we find is when they're on the ground, they deal with excessive heat stress, especially here in Louisiana. And then sometimes in the air, they deal with that as well. And so that's one of the factors. Another thing that they deal with is a lot of noise. Inside of B-52 is extremely noisy. And then also other things, altitude. These are all stressors that they face. So we want to figure out, you know, what are the consequences of these stressors? And then ultimately, just like with the firefighters, we want to start to create solutions.
So did you do any preliminary tests by giving them the temperature pill?
No, we're not going to do that with the Air Force. We'll probably monitor core temperature other ways.
Uh-oh. They're not going to like the other way.
Well, no, we're not doing that either. But that's a long way down the road before we'll start to monitor their core temperature. The first thing that we're doing right now is we're just measuring their aerobic capacity. We're measuring other sort of body composition, things like that, to figure out first where they're at. Research you start with a crawl. You start crawling. First, you need to know who they are. Then you need to figure out what their stressors are. Third, then you start to come up with solutions.
So I have been fortunate, it's been many years ago, to look inside of one. It is cramped quarters. How do they stay there for 48 hours without moving around and doing any kind of exercise?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. And if you've been inside of one, you understand that when you see a B-52 flying in the air, which we do all the time in this area,
yes,
you think it's enormous inside. But just like you and I who've been inside of one, we will be able to tell you that it's very, very small. Where the actual pilots are and the weapon system officers are, it's an extremely small area. And so you're right. Being in there for 48 hours, I mean, you can imagine it would be stressful.
And that you have to be very alert because they're making lots of important decisions.
Exactly.
And it could be very detrimental to not just them, but the whole world, right?
Yeah, and so for like physiological monitoring as well with this group, letting them know, one, if they're getting too hot, if they're getting too tired, if they're getting whatever it might be, but putting in monitoring so that you can tell them when they need to rest, tell them when they need to maybe, you know, have something cold, you know, things like that. Basically create some sort of remediation plan when they get to these stressful levels.
And I want to tell everyone, it's not like riding in a 747 or an L-10, you know, commercial plane. It's not that comforting, right?
Not even remotely close.
And the other thing I think my listeners are saying, why don't they just roll down the window? They're up there 5,000, 10, 20, 30,000 feet. It's very cold up there, right?
Yeah, that would be very cold outside at those elevations.
They can open the window. Luckily, they have all their oxygen, and it bring the temperature down pretty quickly, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly.
So what other issues on the long flights?
Well, there's a lot to be learned about the long flights, but there are several research groups that are, again, you mentioned fatigue. Mm-hmm. They're looking at fatigue and how to monitor fatigue and how to prevent fatigue among these crew, because really that is probably the major stressor that they face, because you can imagine trying to be alert for 30 to 40 hours is difficult. So monitoring fatigue and preventing fatigue, there are other groups that are working on that. We've spoken with them a little bit, but then also, you know, we need to figure out what some of the other stressors are and what are the other things that are contributing to, you know, the environment.
So again, I don't know, is it, it's not a, they don't have a lot of G forces. They don't go that fast, right? So you're not right?
No, they're not dealing with the excessive G-forces like you would if you're flying an F-16 or something like that.
And are you researching what type of oxygen level or what kind of what they're breathing that could help? Or?
No, we're not really getting into that. Again, we're more about physiological monitoring to prevent cognitive issues.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of our main area.
And how would they know the captain of the ship, the plane, he would have the master monitor that would determine if one of his crew members are getting in that stage?
Yeah, again, it would set off an alert saying you're too hot, you're too fatigued, you're too this or whatever it might be, and you need to go rest or you need to, you know, some sort of other remediation.
And I, you know, I could see the benefits of that being, and also could apply to some of those long flights that that I take, 16-hour flights from New Jersey to India. It was a long flight for those, but I'm sure they slept and it was on automatic, but
yeah,
it probably a little stressful for them.
Yeah,
they had to make sure they were awake in case the bells and whistles came off, right?
Yeah, I've flown to Sydney, Australia before, and it was I was cognitively fatigued by the time I got there.
So regarding what the applications, training, safety, and practical, so all your research is going to lead to this?
Yeah, the whole goal is to obviously create solutions.
And you're going to be helping other firefighters and firefighter training places like, you know, we have them here, but I'm sure every city throughout the nation has a firefighter training that new recruits and new people go through, and probably on the job training occasionally to get them more educated, correct?
Yeah, the whole goal is to, you know, look at policy and figure out if we can maybe change policy in order to keep these guys safer.
So, Dr. Kaur, what other professions are you thinking about dabbling into?
Yeah, there's a few groups that I'd like to start working with. I mean, one of them is bomb disposal.
Whoa.
You know, the EOD groups. I mean, I would love to start to work with them because they wear full high-level personal protective equipment. The other ones are individuals that deal with like chemical disposal, where they wear the chemical suits. Mm-hmm. That's also high-level PPE. Lots of groups deal with this. The reality is, though, is a lot of the research we do is, even with the firefighters, is applicable to these other groups as well.
Well, that's important. We hope this research will apply to others, but also you're going to be sharing this knowledge and this research and the outcomes to benefit, you know, many people throughout the world. So
exactly.
Thank you for joining us today. It was quite interesting, quite educational, and I know my listeners found it quite interesting as well as I did. It was something very new that I was not aware of happening, and I'm proud it's happening here in Shreveport and Bossier and Austin LSU Health Center, and I commend you at Allied Health. My wife worked there, by the way, for 20 years. So she was part of that particular program for many years before she came into the Best of Times magazine. So she's involved in that. So thank you, doctor, for joining us today. Don't forget to pick up your personal copy of the Best of Times in one of our 220 distribution locations. May God bless you and your family. God bless America. Have a great day and a great weekend. Thank you again for listening to our show. I'm Gary Kaligas, wishing you and yours the best of times both today and every day. Have a great day.